A weekly pulse on the green and gold with the three-time Wisconsin sports writer Jason Wilde, who looks a lot like Mark Tauscher all of a sudden this morning with his Mark Tauscher training camp cutout. That's Jason Wilde. I'm Alex Roof with you. This is episode one of Weekly Wilde here in the 2024 Green Bay Packers season. What are you doing?
Just excited to be part of this. You asked for Tausch and he turned you down, so I'm doing it.
Yeah. Weekly Wilde with Mark Tauscher has a really good ring to it. Looking forward to doing this each and every Thursday, aside from a few Thursdays when the Packers play on Thursdays through the entirety of the 2024 season with you, Jason. I want to use this as an opportunity to kind of put you in the passenger seat, to take a look at everything that goes on at 1265 Lombardi Avenue every week, a little bit deeper than maybe you have the opportunity to on Wilde and Tausch and all the shows you appear on throughout the week. So I think this will be an exciting ride, right?
I sure hope so. Let's make this awkward right away.
Sure, let's do it.
I think that you are one of our most talented young rising stars.
Yep, it's awkward. You're right.
So when you asked me, you know, having read all your fine work in the Denmark newspaper and having watched you grow into the burgeoning star that you are, when Alex Stroph says, hey, I'd like to do a show with you, you don't say no, because otherwise you're a hypocrite, right? If I'm talking about how great you are, but I'm like, no, I don't have time for you. So look, I know Tausch gives me a hard time. Tausch, that's this guy. You can hear us every weekday, 9 to noon, across ESPN Wisconsin. Gives me a hard time for, you know, I don't have takes and I don't have opinions. The dynamic of our show is a great one. And I say this behind his back. I don't say it to his face because he doesn't like the praise. It makes him uncomfortable, too. The guy's a genius. I do brag about the fact that it was my idea for Wilde and Tausch. Craig Karmazin and Evan Cohen came to me and asked me if I could do a show with anybody on the planet. Who would I pick? And I picked him, and they made that happen. But the dynamic of the show does often lead to me not having a whole lot of opinions. And so when you suggest that we do this in the digital space and wherever else you're going to be able to find it, I thought it was a really good idea. I certainly don't need any further exposure. I got after somebody who was complaining about my work on Twitter today and listed all the places I can be found so he could avoid them. But I don't need the extra exposure, but any opportunity to talk to you once a week, I was not going to pass that up.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, as awkward as that was. But yeah,
I didn't find it awkward at all.
You're lying, because you led that with, let's make this awkward right away.
Well, yeah, it wasn't awkward for me. I made it awkward for you, which is what I was shooting for.
I bet everybody watching this right now has already clicked it off because
no way. There's so much good stuff coming here. Don't turn that YouTube dial.
Let's start with cutdowns, Jason. I mean, this is year 29 on the beat for you. So you've seen these each and every year. You've seen dreams essentially come to an end for a lot of guys in the NFL. It's always a tough day at 1265 and across the league. I think it was only 29 people in total that were picked up from waivers, you know, across the league from other teams, three of which came from the Packers that went elsewhere. What were your initial reactions to cutdowns? I know, like, guys like Christian Welch, who I don't know what else he could have done in the preseason to make the roster. He was a surprise to me. Anthony Johnson Jr., another guy who got in the end zone in the preseason finale, who saw real time at the safety position a year ago, does not make the team and ultimately is picked up elsewhere. What were your initial reactions to cutdown day earlier this week?
Yeah, I unfortunately, while I was disappointed, because I really like Christian, you know, I've gotten to know him. One of my favorite stories from last season was reaching out to his high school coach at Iola Scandinavia and him talking about the great pep talk that Christian gave his team. And they went out and won the game like 53-0 or something like that. But he gave it at halftime when they were only up like 21-0. So they really were fired up in the second half. But, you know, he's one of us, right? I mean, Wisconsin guy, he went to Iowa, but he was playing for the team he'd grown up cheering for, like we did. And I just think, you know, Goody flat out admitted it. He did do enough. He should be on the roster, but he cut him anyway, because they obviously drafted two linebackers in the second and the third round in Edger and Cooper and Tyron Hopper. Those guys weren't going anywhere. Now, they did keep Aaron Mosby, at least for now, who had a spectacular last preseason game too. But, you know, Christian Welch deserved better. There's no denying it. But I wasn't surprised. Like, I just kind of felt really? Like – I felt like when you have the draft picks you did, he's probably going to be the odd man out, even though he doesn't deserve to be the odd man out. So when I saw his name, I was disappointed, but I wasn't surprised. Anthony Johnson, on the other hand, I was legitimately surprised.
Yeah.
They kept Zane Anderson, who's a special teams guy for them, which, by the way, we can get into that. It would appear that Goody has said, okay, Rich, I'm okay now with the roster. I'm going to handle the roster. Because I don't think Rich Bisaccia, it certainly doesn't seem, based on who's on the roster, that Rich Bisaccia has a whole lot of say anymore, including Anders Carlson not being there right. anymore. I would guess that Rich would have liked to have seen them be a little more patient with Anders Carlson. But again, that's a question I want to ask him when I get an opportunity to. But Anthony Johnson surprised me because he took a ton of reps with the ones. Like, they were rotating guys next to X, and he was one of them. And for him to go from that and having a touchdown in the preseason finale to being released, that was a surprise to me. I guarantee you, Goody didn't say this, but I guarantee you that Grant Dubose, who again, I did think would be, if they were only keeping six, he was not going to make it. If they kept seven, he would at wide receiver. I'm fairly certain that Goody's plan was there's not many guys that get claimed. We're going to try and get Grant Dubose and Anthony Johnson Jr. through to the practice squad, carry him there for a little while, and then there's going to be injuries, and we're going to call them up, and they'll be on the 53. And obviously the Miami Dolphins and the New York Giants foiled those plans.
Yeah, for the first time since Taysom Hill, Jason, a Packers player was claimed. It was three of them this year. Does that speak to the depth of this roster, in your opinion? Because obviously this is a very young team, and once again, they will likely be the youngest team in the league. But when I saw that stat come across, I was blown away. The first time since Taysom Hill, a Packers cut was claimed by another team, three of them this year claimed by other teams.
Yeah, earlier in my career, it was like clockwork. There, guys were always getting claimed, right, during the Ron Wolf era and during at least the early portion of Ted Thompson's tenure. But, yeah, that did surprise me. Now, you know, I am a Taysom Hill stan. I always thought that was – they should not have exposed him to the waiver wire. But if I'm being honest, when you look at what he's done in New Orleans – there's been some special moments, but it's not like the franchise was going to fold up shop because they didn't have Taysom Hill on the roster.
Yeah.
That said, it does speak to that. I mean, look, Goody put it, I thought, perfectly. We had more than 53 guys that deserve spots on this roster. And the three of them, plus Christian Welch, who LaFleur said he was signing with Baltimore. And then I had somebody else tell me he was signing with Denver, and I haven't seen, at least not yet, where he landed, but I'm sure he'll have a job. But that tells you they probably had 57 guys, at least, who deserved roster spots, and four guys that didn't get them ended up with other teams.
Well, hold on. I'm fascinated by that Christian Welch thing because I did not see – you're right. At least as of recording, it has not been announced that he signed anywhere. I did see he won't return to the team. But the two teams he might sign with are the two teams that the Packers played in the preseason that he forced a turnover against?
Yeah. So LaFleur was up there because sometimes – I know this comes as a surprise, but sometimes my feelings – despite my unbiased journalistic approach, do tend to bleed over into my job.
Really?
Yeah, I know. Shocking. And so I did ask about Welch. I think to both of them, if someone else asked one of the questions, it was only because they asked it before I could. But the guy deserved a roster spot. He did.
He did.
So I wanted to see how people were going to answer the question. And LaFleur, at the end of his answer, says, I'm glad he's going to get an opportunity with Baltimore. And then one of my other colleagues reached out to somebody who covers the Ravens, who in turn said, that's news to the Ravens. So, and that was the team that Christian Welch had played for previously.
Yeah.
So as we're recording this, I don't know where he's landing. But it would be something if two of the teams they played in preseason that he had interceptions against were the ones that were interested in bringing him on their teams.
Very interesting. We will see how that plays out, I guess. Hopefully we have an answer next Thursday when we record episode 2 of Weekly Wildy, but that's fascinating to me. We'll get to the A.J. Dillon stuff a bit later, Jason, because obviously that's a whole another fascinating story, and we'll see how that plays out in a bit. But I really do want to talk to you about the evolution of Brian Gutekunst, the general manager of the Packers, and the way he constructs rosters, because this year in particular, it seems like he is admitting defeat on draft picks that didn't work out, specifically Sean Clifford, Michael Pratt, and of course the aforementioned Anders Carlson. And in years past, it seems like a big knock on Goody is he's loyal to a fault with guys he drafted, a la Amari Rodgers. Like, that experiment went way too long. You've covered this guy now every year, obviously, of his tenure, both as a scout and now is this year 7 or 8 as the general manager for Brian Gutekunst. How have you seen him evolve specifically when it comes to roster construction? Because it seems like his tone, and you mentioned earlier, it seems like Rich Bisacci isn't really playing a role anymore. This is Goody's roster. It seems like he's changing his ways a bit as he grows as the general manager of the Packers.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I disagree with your premise.
Really?
Because I think for 1 year, you're on scholarship if you're a draft pick. Now, Michael Pratt was a 7th-round pick.
Right. Low risk.
You know, the 5th-round pick that they used on Sean Clifford is a little more of a premium pick, right? I can go through the list of 5th-round picks, including Dontavion Wicks, who have turned out to be potentially very good players, right? It goes back to Corey Linsley. And before that, you know, Dorsey Levens was a 5th-round pick. So those are no joke picks. And when you use them on a punter, like he did on J.K. Scott,
not, right?
a number of years ago, or you use them on a backup quarterback, you're picking them because you intend for them to be on your team. And look, they did bring Clifford back on the practice squad. And there's no guarantee that Malik Willis is going to be an upgrade.
No.
In fact, he's still a developmental project player at this point, right? Like, he's going in. He was in Tennessee for 2 full seasons and a training camp, and he had 3 different offensive coordinators and 3 different offenses. And now he's with the Packers. So in less than 3 NFL seasons, he will have had 4 systems.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see how he fares, because to this point, you know, he fell in the draft and has not been able to show what he's capable of in the NFL. He's only started 4 games or 3 games. His team is 1-2 in those games. So they brought back Clifford because I don't think they're fully giving up on him. I do think that they decided that, I don't know what it was about Pratt, is a strong arm, but I don't think they felt like he was a good fit. So I don't think they would have brought him back had he not chosen to go to Tampa Bay on their practice squad. So, yes, he gave up on a couple of draft picks, right? He gave up on Royce Newman. Some might argue, you know, I know Rob Domofsky would argue long after he should have given up on Royce Newman. But 9 of his 11 draft picks from this class made it. And I think you get 1 year grace, even if you don't do a whole lot. Like Travis Glover, their 6th-round pick, yeah, who made it as an offensive lineman. I mean, he ran with the 3s for a good chunk of training camp. But we're investing a draft pick in you. We're going to give you the opportunity to grow. The Amari Rodgers thing, I think, is a one-off personally. And as has been proven, he obviously hasn't been good enough. But, and again, I don't know him that well. But I do wonder if he is maybe one of those guys that he got off to a difficult start. His quarterback was a jerk to him, and it affected his confidence to the point that he never recovered, because he was talented. If you saw him in college, you knew he was a talented player. But I found myself wondering if he would have gone to a different team with a different quarterback and a different situation and had the same amount of time to grow, if he might have had a different level of confidence. I mean, I just think success in the NFL Yeah, you have to be talented, but guess what? Almost all of them are.
Yeah.
So as Tausch will tell you, I don't know.
Where is he? Yeah, where'd he go?
I lost him. Oh, here he is. As Tausch would tell you, it's also about the situation you go to, right? Like Tausch had an 11-year NFL career, right? He went to a team where Larry Bechtel was a perfect offensive line coach for him, and then James Campen after that. He went to a team where the starting right tackle had back problems, and he got a ridiculous amount of snaps in training camp to get him ready. And Tausch deserves all the credit in the world for taking advantage of the opportunity, but he thought he might be going to the Seattle Seahawks at one point. The Seattle Seahawks may not have offered him the same opportunities, and 2 years later, he gets cut without ever having gotten to play. And so situations matter. And I think what we're seeing with this group is that Goody has put together a lot of talent. There's no denying that. The question is, how does it come together? Because it came together great during the second half of last season. But there are some spots on this roster that even those that are Goody stands, not speaking of anyone in particular, they have to acknowledge that those holes are there. And that's the kicking situation's a mess. Their depth on the offensive line is unproven. And at running back now, because of the A.J. Dillon situation, they've got two guys that are young, inexperienced, unproven, and you cannot take Josh Jacobs and have him play 90% of right. the snaps and have him be ready by season's end still.
All really good points, and that leads me to the two acquisitions that you mentioned, both of them there. Malik Willis trading a seventh-round pick to Tennessee for him, and then signing Braden Arvidsson, the free agent kicker from Tennessee after he was waived. And he will likely be your starting kicker for at least the beginning of the season. Now, those moves are interesting to me because that's filling holes that I think everybody that watched the preseason games in training camp like we did, Jason, we know those are there, right? Quarterback two was a mess. That competition did not go well. Clifford's back on the practice squad, as you mentioned. And kicking has just been a disaster really since last season with Anders Carlson and Greg Joseph this preseason. So going to sign Narvison, trading for Malik Willis, although I don't know that we can definitively call those upgrades, those are moves that tell me Goody understands this is a championship roster. Is that a premise you agree with?
Well, no. So we're off to a good start.
Yeah, we are, which is good.
Because, again, let's take what you're talking about Willis first.
Yeah, sure. You don't view that actually. I want to cut you off quick because you sent out a tweet this week. Badger Noonan tweeted that, you know, Malik Willis, developmental piece. If you were going to go that route, Michael Pratt is on your roster. You still view Malik Willis as a guy that needs to be developed and isn't a bona fide, really good backup. I thought that was a heck of a co-sign from you on Twitter at Jason J. Wilde. So go on.
Well, so I said this on our little WBAY TV show last night with Domofsky and Bill Huber. I love the Malik Willis addition. I don't get it twisted on me. Like I'm fascinated by his talent, and I'm fascinated by the idea of developing him. And Rob made a really good point while we were debating it that hey, maybe by November or December, he is made strides in a new offense and he is a capable backup, but there were plenty of opportunities for them to play him and they chose not to in Tennessee. So look, with my issue is, and I saw this, I think this happened last night, Taylor Heinicke was traded. The Falcons traded him to the Chargers for a sixth.
Correct.
I don't think Taylor Heinicke and I probably fall under the same umbrella with some of his opinions. But I can tell you this, if I'm a GM, that's the guy that I want backing up my guy because he's played in the league and played well in games, has started more games than Malik Willis. He was the guy that, this is what I'm saying. I'm not a huge fan of some of his opinions, but he's a proven commodity. He's not proven to the level of Justin Herbert or being your starter, but he's gotten opportunities to start. And if something happens to your guy, Jordan Love, in this case, I feel like he's shown that there's reason to have optimism that you can win with him as your quarterback. And obviously Jim Harbaugh feels the same way. That's why they acquired him, right? So Malik Willis, I don't personally believe is at that level. I'm certainly open to being wrong on that, but I think he still has a ways to go. That said, when Goody gets up there yesterday and says, and I quote, that there were underwhelming performances from the two quarterbacks that he drafted, that is a pretty damn big indictment of their play. And while they're not giving up on Sean Clifford entirely, he's got to work that out, because he did have some moments, and they were high on him going into camp. And obviously they came out of camp not feeling the same way.
Yeah, for a guy that's viewed as a gamer, it was certainly not a pretty preseason for Sean Clifford. But yeah, it's an interesting move. I didn't see that coming with Malik Willis. Braden Narveson seems like he has a big leg. He had a nice preseason, 6-for-7 on field goals, made both of his extra points. His only miss from a field goal was a 58-yarder. Reason for optimism for the Packers fans, Jason, albeit that it's another rookie kicker for the second straight year?
Look, I don't know anything about Braden Narveson. I know that he made 78% of his kicks in college at three different schools. I know that they drafted Anders Carlson, even though he had some accuracy issues in college.
Yeah, 71% for Anders.
Yes. So I don't, you know, I'm not saying that your college accuracy is the end all be all of whether or not you're going to be a good kicker or not. But again, Goody confessed in front of all of us that he is too impatient with specialists, and that Ted was far more patient. And he talked about being in the building when, during that 2012 season, Mason Crosby was struggling, and he and others in the office were like, let's move on. And Ted did not.
Wow.
So I think it's really interesting. He brought up J.K. Scott unprompted to say that J.K. Scott has now become a very good punter in the league with the Chargers. And I, you know, Tausch gives me a hard time about this, but I've always said, I'm not drafting a specialist. I'm letting specialists go suck somewhere else and work to figure it out. And then once they've gotten it figured out, now I want them, right? But if you're going to draft them, then you got to show patience. And I think this is what I respect about Goody in this instance, is that he was very self-aware to acknowledge his blind spot on this. So he was premature on J.K. Scott. Now J.K. Scott's good. There's a good chance that that'll happen with Anders Carlson, just like it did with his older brother after the Vikings gave up on him. So I think that's part of the root of Matt LaFleur's frustration, is that, hey, we spent all summer looking at these guys, and you don't want any of them. And this kid from Tennessee, there's no guarantee he's an upgrade. Like, they didn't go out and trade for an established kid. They didn't go get Justin Tucker. And the problem here is that Goody said in 2022, when we were talking to him about Mason Crosby, now we didn't know how that season was going to unfold, but they'd been to back-to-back. They had a back-to-back MVP winner. They had been the top seed in each of the previous 2 years. They blew the top seed in the NFC Championship game against Tampa and in a divisional round game against San Francisco. But the quote was, if you have a championship level team, you need a championship level kicker. Don't they think they have a championship level team right now? Is Braden Narveson a championship level kicker? He may become one. I don't know. And neither does Goody. But if you're looking at, well, he made 6-of-7 in preseason, including a 46-yard game winner and a 59-yarder. That doesn't necessarily mean that he is going to do that when the games count and you are trying to win in Brazil on a 54-yard walk-off field goal. Maybe he will. But they did not. I don't know how anybody can look and say, well, they've upgraded. You don't know that. I don't know that. Maybe they have, maybe they haven't. But the bottom line is, they have not solved their problem.
I will put my Packers fan hat on and say, they upgraded. I'm all in on the Narf dog. But we will see. No, you're totally right. Really well said by you. All right, let's give this a shot. About 10 minutes left in episode 1 of Weekly Wildy. We're going to do 4 downs. I've got 4 quick hit questions for you, but brevity's never been your specialty, so I'm going to lead with the one that might take us the longest. First down, what the heck's going on with A.J. Dillon? After he was sat in the second preseason game, I think we all thought, yeah, he made the 53. It comes out that he had his second stinger in 9 months. Now he's put on season-ending IR. Does that mean he will be a member of the Packers this year and will be kind of an assistant coach, cheerleader, et cetera? And I don't mean that in a negative way. Or will he likely not end the season or start the season with the Packers and have the opportunity to go elsewhere? What do you think on the A.J. Dillon front?
So there is the possibility that they can waive him off injured reserve if he wants to pursue another opportunity. He has taken on a mentor role with those running backs, even helping Josh Jacobs, who's more experienced than him, get acclimated to Green Bay. Look, he's a terrific dude, and he's done a fantastic job of becoming part of the fabric of the community, marrying a Green Bay girl that Paula actually coached in gymnastics.
Oh, no kidding.
It's great. But, you know, when you've had, as Matt LaFleur said, when you have a recurrence of an injury, it's absolutely a concern. And, you know, a stinger is a nerve issue in your neck, generally caused by some sort of contact. And the fact that they put him on injured reserve to end his season when they had at their disposal the ability to put him on injured reserve with the possibility of returning, I think it ends his career in Green Bay. Whether it ends his NFL career, I can't speculate, and I have not talked to AJ about it. But I will say this, what our instinct when they sat him and we didn't know he had the stinger in Denver was right. Matt LaFleur flat out said it yesterday. They had a plan for his role on this team. And it wasn't just going to be carrying the football. They had him. They were going to use his versatility. They loved the shape he was in. It's, you know, I don't want to use the word tragedy because there are much worse things that do happen. But this is a football tragedy for a guy who came in to the season in the best shape of his career, like not just saying that, but like legitimately. And now his season is over before it even started.
Yeah, really fascinating how that all came together. Very interesting story on the A.J. Dillon front. Let's go down memory lane. What's your all-time favorite practice squad to superstardom story, Jason, in terms of the Green Bay Packers for second down?
So the best story, and he spent some time on their practice squad late in the 2006 season, and I love the, you know, we didn't know him at all at the time. And then in 2007 on family night, this guy had a big night. He had an interception. And I love to tell the story of being in the Green Mile, which is what we call the auxiliary locker room from the 1999 film, The Green Mile, with Tom Hanks about death row, because that's where your NFL dreams go to die. Tim Van Voren of Fox 6 and I were interviewing this player, and he was so inexperienced about being interviewed that he kept taking Tim's microphone from him and answering the question and then handing it back to Tim. And that player was Tremont Williams. And I know you knew that story, but I was trying to build the momentum for our new viewers of, what are we calling this again?
Weekly Wildy.
Okay. We might have to work on the title. But what's amazing about him, obviously, is that he went on to become one of the best corners in the league in 9, 10, 11 there. So, you know, there are magical moments that happen in preseason and in training camp. But again, it goes back to what I said about Tausch. The opportunity has to be there. You have to seize it. There's no doubt about it. But there are plenty of guys that the opportunity never even comes, so they don't have the chance to seize it, and they never get to find out what they could have been.
Really good story. One of my all-time favorite Packers, Tremont Williams. Third down, real quick. We've seen the explosion of international games. Packers opening their season in Sao Paulo, Brazil. I know you're not on the road as much as you were early in your career, Jason, but I'm curious. What's your favorite road trip in the NFL?
San Francisco. That's where Paula and I got engaged because we both love it there. We're very, very overdue to take the girls back. I have no interest in Sao Paulo. I've not left North America, which I would like to do. I wish I'd have gone to London. I whenever the Packers play in Munich, I definitely want to go. But I will say this, Rob Domofsky is working on a story for ESPN.com and ESPNWisconsin.com about what's all involved in getting this game to go off in Brazil. And it included, Rob told us last night, that they had to put a bunch of equipment on a ship, like a cargo ship.
Wow.
Including goalposts.
No kidding.
The ship left on June 1st.
Wow.
To get there in time for September 6th. So I don't probably tease his work enough. I don't probably tease my work enough either. But this is a story you will want to read because my interest is very much peaked. They also sent a cargo plane full of materials that the NFL has to get to fill. So be on the lookout for that story coming soon from Rob. It's going to be a doozy.
Wow, that's fascinating. June 1st. Yeah, it's going to take some time.
A slow boat to Brazil, apparently.
Yeah, no kidding. Fourth down, last one for you, Jason, here in episode one of Weekly Wildy. Jordan Love's leadership style. How have you seen it evolve from year one to year two as the starting quarterback of the Green Bay Packers?
So he has not led me, right? I'm not one of his teammates. So I'm always leery of reading too much into anyone's leadership style that I'm not on their team. That said, I believe that the best leaders and best coaches are the ones who figure out on an individual basis what the best way is to motivate that person. You treat everyone fairly. You don't treat everyone the same. And I think Aaron Rodgers, early in his career, was very good at it. I've told this story before. Last year in training camp, when Romeo Doubs said, and I quote, "I learned a lot from Aaron, even with him barely speaking to me." I reached out to Aaron right away. I said, "Hey, look, this is going to be a story. I'm going to use this because he said it. And I just want you to know about it." And I'll be honest with you, Aaron was pissed. He was like, I had lunch with him a bunch of times. I don't get it. And my point to him was, whatever you thought was enough clearly wasn't enough. That's a failure by you as a leader. You have to, you know that. And, you know, that's sometimes when I go into older brother mode with him. Yeah. And it's not always welcome. But what I like about Jordan is, and again, I don't know who needs to get their ass chewed by him. And I don't know how effective he is at that. But what I like about him is that he seems to be very conscious of, I'm not going to embarrass anybody. I'm not going to scream and yell at them. I am more likely to take them to the side and talk with them. Now, whether or not he gets after guys who need to be led that way, I don't know. I have not seen evidence of that. I can just say that if I was playing tight end for him, A, I would probably blow a lot of assignments. And B, the best way to motivate me is like, Jason, I know you're better than this. This is disappointing. You got to be better. Like, I need you to be the best version of you. That's how you would motivate me. Screaming and yelling at me and telling me how much I suck is not going to help me. It's going to make things worse for me. So, look, I still believe in you, but we got to get this going, man. Come on. You're better than this. That's the way. And I think he has a very clear ability to connect with his teammates. But the challenge of a leader is what you do when things are going poorly. And while we saw some of that last year, the expectations weren't high when things were going poorly. Now, the expectations have been raised. When they hit adversity this year, how much better, how much more prepared is he for that? That's going to be one of the many questions of this season.
Just over a week away from the season opener in Sao Paulo, Brazil, between the Packers and the Eagles. That does it for episode one of Weekly Wildy. That is the three-time Wisconsin sports writer there, Jason Wildy. You can find him on Twitter at Jason J. Wildy. You can find me on Twitter at Alex_Strofe. You're going to want to find him on Twitter. The show is called Weekly Wildy, so I feel like it's only fair to allow you. You have a four-word catchphrase you say at the end of every show you do. Take it away, Jason.
Let's change the name.
Well done.
Yeah.